Support for this podcast is brought to you by the Wyoming Humanities. We take a closer look at our human experiences and use stories to explore culture, history, and contemporary issues. You can find us on thinkwhy.org.
And we thought, again, this is Asia. And we began to tease something out that maybe this is kind of more broad than just Asia, than just China, than just Asia. And we weren't even sure if this was a real book, but we wrote it, and it turned out to be Half the Sky.
Hello, I'm Emmy DeGrappa. This is What's Your Why? Each week, we bring you stories asking our guests the question why. We learn about their passion, why they do what they do, why should we care, and what can we learn? What better place to explore the human landscape than from the state known for its incredible landscapes, Wyoming? And what better organization than Wyoming Humanities? Serving our state for over 45 years, we share stories, ideas, and wisdom about the human experience. Welcome to What's Your Why? Today, we are talking to Pulitzer Prize-winning authors, filmmakers, and journalists Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wooden. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Good to be here.
Our focus today is to talk about your personal passions. For the two books you have written, Half the Sky and A Path Appears, your work as journalists, and your support for the humanities, as I have read Nicholas's articles in the New York Times. First of all, Cheryl, just talking about your books, your first one, Half the Sky, what was your passion in writing that, and what was your journey down that road to start that book?
Well, actually, the first book we wrote was China Wakes, way back after we were living in China as foreign correspondents for the New York Times. And that actually was the seeds for what later, many years later, became Half the Sky. And that's because, first of all, Half the Sky comes from a Chinese saying, basically Mao Zedong, Chairman Mao Zedong, who said, "Women hold up half the sky." And when we were living in China, we noticed that there was a slight feeling of discrimination against women in the sense that there were many babies who were female who were missing from the Chinese population. And over the years accumulated, it turned out there were 30 million missing female babies from the Chinese population. And at the time we thought, we wrote about this in China Wakes, our first book, and we thought, well, this is just China. China is full of contradictions, very, very fascinating country, full of good and evil. So we just, you know, relegated it to that. And then we moved to Asia, to Japan, and we wrote a book about Asia. And also there was a chapter that in the book on women, there was discrimination against women also in Asia. But again, it was one chapter in 20 plus chapters. And we thought, again, this is Asia. And we began to tease something out that maybe this is kind of more broad than just Asia, than just China, than just Asia. And we weren't even sure if this was a real book, but we wrote it, and it turned out to be Half the Sky.
And so from there, you went from Half the Sky and then went on to write A Path Appears. So
that's
how
right.
Many years later was that?
It was 5 years later. Essentially, after we wrote Half the Sky, people kept asking us, so what do I do? And we wanted to answer that question. I mean, it seemed to us that a lot of Americans want to make a difference, aspire to find some kind of greater purpose or meaning, but are skeptical about whether anyone really can make a difference, are distrustful of aid groups, and often, frankly, legitimately. And so we wanted to address that and kind of give people a sense of what they can do, either with money or with time, that really will truly make a difference either at home or abroad. And the result was A Path Appears.
We also wanted to broaden it beyond women and girls because there were so many people who said, what about the men and the boys? Because they are definitely part of a society that needs to help change attitudes towards women. And it really is men and women, boys and girls working side by side to change the attitudes towards women, but also to change attitudes towards people who are underprivileged, people who are impoverished, and we found that there were so many fascinating things that people were doing, so many innovative startups, both in the for-profit and the not-for-profit world. It was as though, wow, how come we haven't been hearing so much about all these myriad things that are going on? And we said, well, we've got to write about this.
Do you think the media plays up the negative and doesn't tell you about the inspiration of these people's lives and maybe the stories that inspire you, that there is a good side to our human nature and you don't just see all the horror?
You know, I think there is a legitimate problem that we in the news business, our role is to cover planes that crash, not planes that take off. And in the context of aviation, we understand that, though there are planes that are taking off all the time. I think in the context of global poverty in particular, people don't. And they sort of think that, you know, the whole world is a mess, that there's no improvement. In fact, there's been spectacular improvement. Child mortality dropped in half since 1990. Huge gains in girls' literacy and other areas. And we still are in the business of covering planes that crash, but we still have to provide that context to underscore that there has indeed been progress and that there can continue to be progress if we focus on the right things.
Tell me one of your favorite inspiring stories that really has touched your heart in your travels.
Well, there is a story about a little girl named Rachel. We write about her in A Path Appears. And she's about 8 years old and living in Seattle. And she hears about, from her church, the fact that in parts of Africa, a lot of people don't have clean water. And she was just horrified. This is something that she grew up with, that, you know, she had clean water. How come other people don't? And so she decided to raise money through charity water for digging wells in places where people don't have clean water. And so she set as her goal $300. And a few days before her 9th birthday, well, she wasn't going to make it. She's a little disappointed. Then Rachel and her family got a car crash. Rachel was critically injured, and she was sent to the hospital in critical condition. And people wanted to show their sympathy, and they remembered her fundraiser. It's a birthday fundraiser on charity water, and they started donating. You know, so she, you know, raised way past $300. And then her family had to make the heartbreaking decision of pulling her off life support because she wasn't going to make it. And then at that point, people basically, there was an outpouring of sympathy way beyond what it was beforehand. And she soared past $500,000 up to basically $1.2 million. She raised $1.2 million for the cause. And it was a dramatic loss for her family. But her mother, a year later, went out to visit the families who got clean water because of what her daughter had done. And when she went out there and she visited the mothers and the daughters who knew her story, at each well, they placed what you could call a tombstone, thanking Rachel for what she had done. And her mother just broke down in tears saying, oh, this is what my daughter did. She did far more than what I have done in my lifetime. So it made her think, you know, Rachel had a real purpose in her life. And so it makes us all think, you know, what is our purpose in life?
That brings tears to my eyes. And I did read your book and I did watch the film documentary, but just hearing you recount that, that's an amazing story. How about you, Nicholas?
People often ask why we focus so much on women and girls. And, you know, it's partly because what we've seen in terms of the impact of investing in girls as a way of transforming societies. And one place we saw this was in rural China. In 1990, we were writing about how so many girls were dropping out of school because they were girls. And we chose as the poster child for this phenomenon this girl who just dropped out of sixth grade for want of $13. Her name was Dai Manju. And we wrote about her. Her picture was on the front page of the New York Times, three columns. And so you can imagine, readers wanted to support her. They flooded us with checks for $13 for the most part. And we also got one wire transfer for $10,000. We took all this money down to the school, and they used that money to ensure that all girls in that village would be able to stay in school as long as they could maintain the grade. That for the first time in this village, your academic prospects would be a function not of your chromosomes, but of your capacity. That was in 1990. We followed up periodically over the years, and it's kind of extraordinary. I mean, all of China has gotten richer, all of this province, Hubei, has gotten richer, but this village is truly transformed. That girl herself became the first in her family to graduate from elementary school, from middle school, from high school, became an accountant. So many other girls who otherwise would have ended up in the rice paddies got a great education in ways that didn't just advantage them, but helped the whole community. So you go back, and it's sort of extraordinary how this village has been catapulted way above all the others all around it because of this complete fluke, this accident of these gifts to that one school back in 1990. It's a reminder of the power of educating girls.
So I just have one last question before we leave. And since I work for the Wyoming Humanities Council, I wanted to ask you about your support for the humanities. And I've read some articles that you've written in support. And I want to just tell our audience about that.
we obviously need the sciences, and we need people to have the rigor of math and quantitative methods. But I think there's sometimes a tendency today to just shrug at the humanities and think they're a ticket to nowhere. In fact, I think that often they do convey a certain skill in critical thinking, a capacity for analysis that benefits whatever one may end up doing. And I think that also it's important to remember that scientific abilities also need to be regulated in ways that are determined not by science itself, but by ethical concerns of a larger society. If we have the capacity to tinker with our germ line of our genes so that we can change the human genome indefinitely, that's an incredible decision that we as a society will have to make. And that's one that is going to be informed by ethics going back to Socrates and Aristotle. Fundamentally will depend as much on the humanities as it does on the sciences. Sure, the sciences are transforming the world. We definitely need sciences and those quantitative methods. But we also need a dose of the humanities to leaven them in this 21st century.
Well, you know, I heard a professor say it shouldn't be called STEM, it should be called STEAM, and should add the arts and the humanities in there. One more thing that I was just thinking of, because you're such a beautiful couple, and how did you meet?
We met in Los Angeles, and we were basically introduced by a friend.
Really?
Yeah, fellow journalist, so we're ever grateful to her. I mean, you know, we've seen her a couple of times, and it's just so funny. Matchmaking still does exist.
How many children do you have?
We have three kids, three wonderful kids.
That is so great. Well, it's so wonderful to see you together, because I have a daughter. She decided she wouldn't marry a man who wouldn't be willing to adopt. And so they adopted a little boy from Hong Kong. And they really, I mean, that's been her heart's desire, is to have an orphanage. And so I was thinking about you two, how you really have to have the same heart to do what you do.
We're always really admiring of the people who are on the front lines working in refugee camps. I mean, my heart breaks when I think of the work that they do. I mean, really, we're just writers.
We're just in the lighting business. We shine our spotlights on those people, and they're out on the front lines taking incredible risks, doing extraordinary work, and it's a privilege to shine our spotlights on their work.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. I'm Emmy DeGrappa. This Think Why podcast is brought to you by the Wyoming Humanities. We use the humanities as a lens to explore the human experience. You can find us online at thinkwhy.org.